There is a common point in all those technologies and all those aspects is that when you're alone, you cannot reach any of these objectives, which is crossing the desert with a motorcycle or mm-hmm. fly in a plane or run a computer program.
This is a Security Weekly production. Security Weekly is a resource of Cyber Risk Alliance.
The Cybersecurity Collaborative, in conjunction with Cyber Reason, is proud to present CISO Stories. Each week, CISO Stories takes a deep dive on security leadership. The Cybersecurity Collaborative is a unique membership community enabling cybersecurity leaders to work together in a trusted environment. To learn more, visit securityweekly.com/CSC.
I'd like to welcome Moho Israel to the show. Moho, welcome. It's good to have you here.
Hello, Sam. Thank you for inviting me in this show. As you notice, I have a French accent, so I will try to do my best in English.
You do great in English. I think your English is better than my French. But I thoroughly enjoy our conversations. And I remember one of the very first ones that we had, we dove quite deeply into a number of subjects, but all over the spectrum. And I was amazed, and I will hopefully we'll pull some of this out for those listening. But just so people know, you have an academic background, you are a writer. In some ways, you're an athlete and a man of adventure, but your day job, I believe, is the CISO for Orpea Group, and hopefully I pronounced that correctly. And the business for Orpea is dependent care, right? And I know it's
right.
Blocked, but how do you describe that to people?
Well, basically, people are getting older and older everywhere, especially in the Western countries. And so Orpea started around 30 years ago, and there were essentially retirement houses. And then some clinics were started about Alzheimer, which is linked to also old people. And then more recently, at-home healthcare started, and very recently, telemedicine, which makes for business very, very logical around dependency.
We live in an age of biosensors where people wear things on them, on their wrists. They can do everything from blood pressure at home to measuring their heart rate at any given moment and all sorts of other telemetry. And the houses are getting instrumented. And you know, I know there's a syndrome about dependent sort of caregiver burnout. It seems like we should be going into an era where we can get better quality of support at home and real medicine at home. Is that a focus for Orpea and the security and privacy around that?
Yes, of course, because IoT, Internet of Things, is more and more used for all these kind of measures like heart rate, etc. And one of the most important IoT for us is about sensing that someone is falling down on the floor or having an attack, any kind of attack, and having an urgent and immediate response to that. So it's very close from what we have in cybersecurity, what we call a SOC in cybersecurity, like a security operation center. It would be a doctor operation center. So alerting is the main goal and the main target for the IoT in healthcare right now, in my opinion.
It's massive. Usually when I interview people, I go into their background and how they got started. But it has not escaped me that you wrote a book that has a name very similar to this show, and that poker is a thing for you. If I'm not mistaken, you've played it for many years and you've actually written a few books on the subject. Is poker a passion for you? And it's supposed to be a theme on the show that I often neglect, but is that a thing that you do a lot of or play a lot of?
Yeah, it was part of my bucket list when I restarted playing poker after many years. I started initially with my father. I was like 16 or 18, mm-hmm. and in family games and friends games. And then when the dot-com started the online poker in France. It was in 2010. I restarted everything, and I thought, wow, this is amazing. There is everything I like. There is the human interaction, and there is the mathematics, the probabilities, all in the same topic, which is poker. And then I understood that to be an expert in that, I would need at least 10 years. And I started to make notes about every step I was climbing. And I then in 2014, I started to write my first book called Sardines.
And Sardines.
Yeah, the sardine.
Yeah.
And it's the smallest fish, and there are plenty. So as you know, in poker, there is a sea of fish, mm-hmm. and then the fish eat each other. So you have to become a bigger fish. After the sardine was a hit, I was writing the poisson rouge.
The red fish, yeah.
The red fish, yeah. And then the piranha, which is biting a little. Mm-hmm. And then the grouper. And then the manta ray, and finally the shark. And
then, nice.
Then I put all it together, and it became Basics and All In. So All In is a kind of book that has around 1,000 pages, and it's the complete course to from start to the best level you can reach in poker. But it is very important that I learn one thing here and I verify one thing here is you have to work. Mm-hmm. You have to work and you have to work again. And so it's not enough to read a book. It is very important to put it in practice, and you need a lot of time to make your own experience. So books are okay, but they are just the starting point of your own experience.
You sort of have to do it. And do you feel that it's a fit analogy for security or even for anything in life? Was poker for you in a microcosm, a story of human evolution and maturity on a personal scale? Is that, it sounds like you could be describing how to grow up in some ways.
Yes, you hit the point. So poker is a kind of simulation of real life. And I improved myself in a lot of things like calm, also analysis of the situation, and for the crisis, for example, because it's a real fight, it's a real battle, poker. So it's very good to have this kind of skills related to real life when there is a crisis or when there is a security incident. It's exactly the same. And it works on any kind of topic, actually. If you want to be an expert, you have to work, and you have to work again. And then after maybe 10 years or 1 million hands in poker, you can call yourself an expert. But then you understand that you know very little of it.
Yes. It's the unknown unknowns. Yeah, you understand in some ways what you didn't know that you didn't know.
Yeah. Right. This is part of the adult learning model, and it works in any kind of things you can do in your life. It's valid for sports, of course, and poker is a kind of intellectual sport. And so the only difference with sport, instead of seconds, you have to have a metric, which is money, which is very challenging because a lot of people are concerned by money and for the result. And they don't get it, that the point is not the result, is the decision-making process. And then the result is just a question of probability and variance about the good decision or the bad decision.
So I almost am frightened that I'm going to leave something out, because in your background, you've done so much. And I want to switch from that to how you came to be Moreau today, somebody who's constantly evolving as well. Because you weren't originally French. I believe you were Egyptian, right?
Originally, I was born in Italy, in Rome.
Ah.
Yeah. And because my father was thrown out of Egypt when Nasser made it against Israel in all the wars they had. Mm-hmm. And in 1953, my father had to find a country as a refugee, and only Italy was able to make it. So he went to Rome, and this is why I was born in Rome, from my mother that was escaping from the Austrian Jewish problems, I would say, like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They met in Rome, and that's why I was Italian. So until I was a teenager, I was only speaking Italian, as a matter of fact.
But today, we were on a conference call with some healthcare CISOs, and you belted out some Spanish. I believe you have a relative who's Colombian, right?
And my daughter, actually, she's Colombian. We adopted her in Bogota. Mm-hmm. About 25 years ago, and it was a kind of adventure, of course. I met many nice people that were also parents that were adopting, and so we stayed many months there. And when you speak Italian, well, Spanish is a kind of easy task, yes.
And you lived in Morocco for a while as well. I lived there as a child. I think I cottoned on to you had done some charity work there too.
Right. I was not living there, but I've been in Morocco many times. I think it's one of the countries I know more. And this is because when I was younger, I was a Dakar race motorcycle pilot for Yamaha. And mm-hmm. I've been there many times. And when in the 90s, and I finished in 2006, I made many rallies there in Africa. And then when Paris-Dakar race moved to South America, we decided with some friends to put it in a humanitarian cause. And we went in Morocco, in the mountains and in the desert, to help people. And this is something I learned a lot also. If you help people, it's more rewarding than to receive something. I think to give something is one of the most rewarding stuff you can do. And it's like sharing what you know. Teaching is also very rewarding, but giving food or giving shoes or clothes or books to people, or in our case, we were also connecting internet in the mountains with some telecom Wi-Fi, with mm-hmm. electrical, autonomous electrical power supply. And also we did a small hospital desert on those years. Yes, it was very, very rewarding and challenging.
And you still do it, right? I realize with the recent influx of refugees and immigrants to Europe, I believe you've still been doing charity work, right? You've been helping some of the groups of people get internet access and computers and things like that. Did I hear that right the other day?
Yeah, correct. This is because you understand that I'm a refugee somewhere. Mm-hmm. And when we have this jungle, so-called, in Calais, which is north of France, there are thousands of people that are packed there in a slum, mm-hmm. and they try to cross the channel to reach UK. Of course, mm-hmm. they can't. And so they have nothing. They are just like a gigantic slum there. And the main point was to help them to learn some French, to complete the forms for the immigration, for example.
Yeah.
So we did a school there with a power supply and internet access, of course, on 4G and Wi-Fi. And it was incredible. Now everything is erased because they decided that this would not be able to exist anymore. So the people, they are just spread now everywhere in north of France and trying again to reach the the promised land, which is UK.
And let's shift gears a little bit. We still haven't talked about security very much, but I think it can naturally fit with all this. When did you and how did you first get the bug for security?
Well, this is a kind of skill from my father. I started to program to code very early with the Trash 80, the TRS-80, mm-hmm. that he bought from a Texas Radio Shack in 79. And I started to code a lot. And I started my first company by doing a kind of what we call an ERP today. Mm-hmm. And I understood in the early 90s or early 2000, I would say, that internet was the wow effect. Everything would be a new economy, a new society made about internet paradigm. So when I was working in a large corporate at that time, I've seen that actually security was an issue. It was the very start of Checkpoint and the firewalls and the antivirus, and the very start of the e-commerce as well. And I said, this is very interesting because hacking, it's a kind of curiosity feature. And so this curiosity feature was leading me to try to understand what were the security holes. And I understood very soon that this could be a full-time job, actually.
Yeah, that's amazing. That wasn't obvious at the time. So what year was this about when you first sort of found that?
It was for cybersecurity that is named like that today. It was in 97, 98. So ISO 27001 was not existing. It was a British standard.
Yes. Yes. MBS 7799.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I met one guy from British Gas. His name is John Phillips. I like him very much because he opened up the idea for us to make a kind of community in France, and it was called NetFocus. Mm-hmm. And everything started from those 5-10 guys at the beginning in 97-98, yes.
I figured it was the late 90s by the Checkpoint reference, but it might have been a little sooner. Now, you recognize that this was a potential career. When did you say, yeah, this is my career?
There is no such a point where I said it's my career, but actually I was having a lot of missions and a lot of jobs, a lot of work. And then when you start to have a lot of work, you see, okay, why would I bother with another kind of career when this is a very good one? For example, at this moment, I'm 63, right? Mm-hmm. Normally, in any other job, I would be unemployed or retired. And in this job, not because of France necessarily or Europe, I think it's the same everywhere. When you have a skill that is usable for a company, they keep you forever because they need you. So we have to spot definitely in our tactics which kind of job is able to make us usable for companies, mm-hmm. for corporate, and which jobs are fading because they will not be used one day or another. For example, like taxi driver. Mm-hmm. I think it's the end for them.
Yep, I have to agree. And that's tough. So maybe we shift gears again a little bit and say, I know you wrote a book called The Cybersecurity Instinct. And I have to say, you are an ageless person in many ways, because I always find you're curious and on an adventure. And I've said that word with you a few times, and it's hard not to when you hear about the Paris-Dakar races. And when I know that you started flying relatively late, right? You became a pilot as well.
Yes, I wanted to be an astronaut, but you know, at those time it was not really possible. So I switched to the same simple private pilot. So I did that. It's one of the most interesting experiences you can do to fly by yourself. But there is a common point in all those technologies and all those aspects is that when you're alone, you cannot reach any of these objectives, which is crossing the desert with a motorcycle or fly in a plane or run a computer program. Whatever we do, we have to be together to accomplish this. If you stay alone, if anyone stays alone, we are just apes.
Yeah.
So there is a common point in all this experience of my life is that only when people join together to reach an objective, they can do things totally outstanding.
You said the word apes, and that reminds me, when we had a dinner maybe nearly a year, 15, 16 months ago, a wonderful dinner in Paris, and the group started to talk about Noah Yuval Harari's book, Sapiens, which in effect is us as a genus. And you really felt, I think, a connection with that work. Tell me if I'm wrong on that, but it strikes at the heart of the sense of people together and how we got here as a collective story and where we're going. Am I reading too much into that, or has it been a big influence on you, even if it's relatively?
I really triple check this. Sapiens changed my life because it gave me, this book gave me a sense of why the history that I was supposing totally disconnected from what is going right now, history has a common sense. The common sense is that the people, and this is the 10 times wow effect, right? What I'm going to say, the people have to cooperate to win. So all the organization, the empires, the whatever organization, the businesses, all the organization, they have to cooperate to win. And to win, you have two categories of jobs. The dictators or the emperors or the kings or the billionaires and the contributors. So there is a share of roles, and you have to understand, unfortunately, Sam, that we are in the contributor role. But to make everybody work together, we need a glue. And Yuval Noah Harari call it the mythical glue. What is that? Is the people, they have to believe in something in common. So this is a very important thing, because if you don't believe in your country or in your company or in your values, then you become a lonely ape. And the lonely ape is someone that is having a lot of internal problems. And the first one is to be not connected with the reality and the economy. So everything that Yuval Noah Harari says is that this mythical glue is only in our head. So if we don't buy it, then we have a problem. So we have to restore the mythical glue. And what happened is the virus. Yeah.
Well, he started the book, and what I found was he took things I knew and arrayed them in a narrative that was breathtaking and beautiful. From the beginning, where he talks about mathematics to physics to chemistry to biology to history to all the way through philosophy and beyond, as a series of abstractions that are built on one another. We know all the basics, but he put it together in such a breathtaking way. And exactly. What got me with this shared mythology, he said, there is no such thing as currency. I mean, what used to be, we thought we could say it was tied to gold.
It's a piece of paper.
But it's an idea.
Or it's a number on a computer.
Right, it's an agreed upon thing that is real because we agree on it. The same thing with a country, France, the United States. And that these things aren't actual things, but because we all behave as if they are, they become so. Legal frameworks. Quite an amazing idea for people to dive into. And so this changed your life, right? You're saying this didn't just, wasn't just, it, you knew the basics, but it was put together in a structure that you said, that's it. And now going forward, this sort of before and after, by the way, you saw Harari speak, I think, right, once?
Yes, when he made the French version of his third book, 21 Lessons for 21st Century, I was invited in his conference in Paris, and he was speaking a very good English, by the way, and translation was very funny because there was a kind of delay for the people with the helmets. So when he made a joke, there were like 10 seconds before the people were laughing.
Yeah, I'm speaking French. I often have trouble with that simultaneous translation. I have to turn it off. But is he like, is his voice in person like his voice in the book? And does he talk about the same sorts of things, or is there another dimension to it?
I think that the human, he's a kind of flooded by what he has been writing, which is the same when you are a writer. When I reread the books I've been writing, actually, I'm impressed. Many times I say, did I write that?
So, did that come from me? How's that possible? Yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah. Not on the emails, though. Only on the books, because you have to think about what you're writing. And then, yeah. But this is it. And I think the man is flooded by the content. It's like any breathtaking idea like that. He's, of course, he knows what he's saying, but he doesn't foresee all the impact he's having on millions of people about that.
Until he sees them face to face,
yeah. It's not like a messiah. He's not preaching, right? He's just putting the pieces together.
Right.
And one of the pieces that are linked to that is the fact that we are in the middle of a revolution, and the COVID made it very clearly. There is some shift in the economy and in the society that is making jobs changing. So the old jobs are not anymore, or they will fade. So especially the young people, they will have to think about the new jobs, the new categories of jobs. And this is the main takeaway. You have to work a lot to be an expert in your job, so you will have a job, definitely, even later. But you have to drop your kind of skill if they become obsolete. You have to have the courage to drop it. So in a way, if cybersecurity becomes obsolete for any reason, for example, an artificial intelligence does the job, you have to shift to something else and maybe code artificial intelligence, right?
Being an AI cowboy of the future of sorts. You sort of stole provided the answer to what I was going to ask, which is where are we headed. So in the time we have remaining, I think I've got a couple of questions. My first one is, what advice do you have for someone today? Because I get the impression you're saying it's not about what you've done. It's not about what you know in the moment. It's about how you adapt and how your curiosity of mind, your habits of mind that you bring to whatever the world is today. That can be scary. It's scary for people who've been working a career or who finally think they've, quote, achieved something, or young people going, how do I get in on this? How do I not get frustrated? What advice do you have for them and how to tackle that world?
To be a triple A's.
Triple A's.
Yes. Seven. Analog, adaptive apes.
I like that.
So
not the American Automobile Association here. No. Because cars are a thing. No. An analog adaptive ape.
Yeah. So what does that mean? It means that now we can do a lot of things with internet, right? Mm-hmm. And in the specific case, we are on Zoom conference, which was a kind of killer app in the COVID time. So it's clear that global jobs, what we could call an e-job, are perfect for the young to specialize. Mm-hmm. So in cybersecurity, definitely, if I were starting from scratch, I would try to be a cybersecurity pen tester or a SOC analyst, a security operations center analyst, or a hacker with a bug bounty, like in the Far West, where you have the la prime, how do you call that?
It's a reward.
The bounty, yeah. So I would be probably, if I were starting right now in the cybersecurity, I would be a bug bountier.
So not just an AI cowboy, you would be out hunting, a bounty hunter.
Right. So I think this is very challenging and very interesting. And of course, all the e-jobs that you can have some kind of skill, like if you know how to design something, you can be in the games designer or a UX designer, or if you have some nice appearance and know how to talk, you can be a YouTuber or a Twitcher or vlogger. Mm-hmm. Or you can be a coach, also an e-coach, for example, for mental, for sports, for music, etc.
And we didn't even touch on the fact that you're a guitar player too, right?
Yeah, right. You can be a musician, coach, for example. There are a lot of people that make a job about that. So I think we have to drop the idea to work for someone, but instead to have skills so the people call us through grids of jobs and other kind of ways of finding people now with the internet, like teachers, etc. So I think this is really relevant for young people that are really starting. And you make a note that CISO is not part of this.
Right. We are out of time, so I have only one other question for you. When I've come to Paris, we've done some wonderful CISO dinners and events together, just birds of a feather. And I'm only a sardine, but I would love it if we did either a Zoom with anyone in the world, or next time, if and when we get to a post-COVID moment, we had a poker round table and maybe a masterclass from you. But if we played a game, would you be up for a CISO game of, or a security person game of poker at some point?
Oh, that would be fantastic, Sam.
I think we should do that. I've done trivia and I've done all sorts of other games, but I think poker is the king of games, right? And I think it would be wonderful to do with our colleagues.
What is fascinating with poker is that even the sardine can beat the champion.
They just have to know when to get out, right? If they make money, it's about when you stop putting money in. Yeah.
But eventually, anyone can win in poker. That's the beauty of it. It's not like tennis or other kind of competition where always the same win, because there is very few variants, like in chess or even in bridge. Mm-hmm. But in poker, there is such a variance around the probabilities that on one single pot, you can beat the champion. This is fascinating.
And backgammon's like that for me too. I play many games, of which also bridge and whist and chess. But I always find that poker and backgammon, anyone can win. It is a much more complex game over time. I know that's frustrating to people that like the more structured games, thinking that chance has a big play. But hey, that's life, right?
Yeah. The life contains the tilt experience, means the people can be so shocked that they start to do something from their instinct, from the other brain, the ancient brain from the apes. And so they do stupid things. And sometimes those stupid things turn out to be fantastic, which is totally random. But it's a good fun to socialize and to talk with friends and to play some cards with little money, of course. It's a very, very funny adventure, and I would like to do so.
Let's do it then. So we are out of time, and so I'll say it in French and then in English. Merci infiniment, mon ami. Thank you so much, my friend, and I've thoroughly enjoyed our chat.
Very welcome, Sam. Take care.
Take care.
Cyber Reason is the champion for today's defenders, providing an endpoint security platform to prevent, detect, and respond to malicious operations on computers, mobile devices, servers, and the cloud. Cyber Reason. End cyber attacks from endpoints to the enterprise to everywhere. Learn more at cyberreason.com/CISO stories.